Coming up next on KSEO KOMY, it is hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSEO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Why do we never get...
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Tuesday for those listening live. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. Beautiful day in Santa Cruz. It must be like 70 degrees out there today, Mrs. Future.
Yeah. For all those people who are watching spring snow thaw.
We'll send you some good vibes from our neck of the woods here.
Sunshine coming through the airwaves here.
So this week is going to be kind of special. We have a guest in the second hour, Carolyn Casey.
Yeah, a bit of a celebrity around these parts in the Bay Area. She's a alternative mystic activist. So
visionary activist.
Best of the Bay Area for the folks listening today.
A visionary activist that is deeply into collaboration, it would appear. So I want to hear about how that all works.
Yeah, she is not your average activist. She really has a unique point of view.
Like the title of her talk in Santa Cruz is Magnetizing the Return of Harmonia. That's just not the usual. Via pragmatic mysticism, democratic animism, and applied divination.
Yeah, she's not the kind of person you're going to see at any kind of a political convention, but she is a little bit like Campbell.
I would say she's in the camp of Campbell, and she would be one of the mythic characters that are very curious about the new myth that we all live our lives by today. She's a poetic storyteller, in my understanding.
Yeah, and I'd say we're the kind of politicians who believe that the myth is where we need to do the work. We need the stories that we're telling ourselves to be better stories that give humanity a better heroic mission.
For after all, it's our stories that is what we make real.
Yeah. So it should be a really good talk here in the second hour.
So on to some of the Dr. Future news this week. One of the big things out of one of the conferences involved with the high-tech film world is called South by Southwest. And it finished last week. According to the reports I've been hearing from there, the Apple's research kit has been a big hit.
Mm-hmm. But that's such an unusual collection of people. So South by Southwest started by taking over kind of from SIGGRAPH as the
cool festival to go to.
Yeah, the cool festival for the computer geeks to go to.
The Digerati.
Yeah, the Digerati. And what made it cool is that it was the apps meeting cinema. And so South by Southwest was really this kind of local Austin Cannes Festival with the app developers.
This fits
up
in very well with Dr. Future's theories about all this.
Yeah?
Yeah, about how the cell phone is going to become the center for your health in the future.
I see. Yeah, so now South by Southwest has followed Apple right into that space.
You see, what's interesting about Apple's research kit is that it allows people to participate in research studies around the world on whatever you're interested in.
And to do it anonymously. I think that's what Apple adds to the equation. Apple really wants to make it easy for people to send in their data and yet not feel like their privacy is compromised.
It's more than data, too. Like, I guess it's a different kind of data, but you can breathe into it and you can pick up information about your breath. You can say things and it can give you information about dementia.
So you think Siri will tell you when you need a mouthwash kind of thing?
She'll tell you when you need to take some memory pills.
You think Siri is going to tell you when to take memory pills?
She'll
notice that you're forgetting stuff?
Dr. Future, your recall rate is one-third of what it was 10 years ago.
Does that mean your Alzheimer's is on the rise?
Yes. We suggest immediately Ginkgo biloba.
Honey.
Biloba.
Yeah, there you go. I'm not Siri, but I'm reminding you that you forgot the right name there.
Yes, I know. It was almost a good joke.
It was
that
a good
final
joke.
Final piece.
No, that made it better.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it.
Okay, so anyway, back to the story. Research Kit is an open source platform. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it collects healthcare research data. It collects actual data from your voice, from your breathing, your pulse. Your pulse will be incorporated.
Apple's huge, big new thing for people who are not Apple watchers. Yeah. Research Kit is getting all of the health companies on board with the
you can aggregate
open
data.
Source project.
Yeah, it's an open source so that everyone can use it. And it's actually, what's interesting is it's kicking Google in the pants to get going on this.
Oh, really?
Because Google has shown a very big interest in health as well, in the future of health. This will get them having an Android version of this thing that is a comparable, hopefully, better.
Well, says who? I mean, how is Google even part of this conversation so far?
Well, it has to do with smartphones being the center of the, you know, because your smartphone is going to be the center of your health system. Mm-hmm. And whether or not you're an Apple user, it shouldn't be exclusive just for Apple people. Mm-hmm. It's like the premium version. It's like having a BMW instead of a Chevy.
I see. So you think that the Google developers will start coming up with their own research projects?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're going to see the whole thing push forward back and forth.
And can Google people use Research Kit as well, or is it only Apple?
It's only Apple right now. It's not compatible with Android.
I see. So it's really just throwing it in the gauntlet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep an eye on that. That's going to be very interesting. It's a chance to participate with literally thousands of research studies around the world on just about every medical topic you can think of, from schizophrenia to heart disease.
Well, I hope I don't have to participate in those research studies. Thank you very much. But
I know medical options aren't exciting. They're usually the ones you have to pay attention to. I know, right? It should be more fun.
Yeah, well, if my schizophrenia gets any worse, just let me know.
No, it gets fun. I'll tell you, you know when it gets fun? It gets fun when the 3D printers are finally able to print biology. Okay, because at that point, we'll print designer bodies for the next occasion that we want to attend. It will become like clothes. Molecules will become as play stuff for the universe, along with the way we play with photons and electrons these days. It all becomes much more fun at that point.
See you soon.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Welcome, John Monahan, into the studio.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I wanted to mention, there's also this week, I found about this new molecule-making machine that certainly has piqued my curiosity. Advances in 3D printing have reached the point where creating stuff, molecule-making machines, where we're creating a fundamental set of molecules from which we can make anything.
I see. So we pour in water, and then we get out all kinds of varieties.
Kind of like the periodic table of molecules, as opposed to elements.
Okay. Well, tell me more.
Well, I'm just learning myself. I thought it's a very interesting idea.
Yeah.
Today in the Huffington Post, the people that are most interested initially, guess who they are?
Drug developers.
That's right. Because they already are thinking on a molecular level. Drugs are molecular engineering.
Well, and we've covered all kinds of stories about how drug research is being revolutionized by doing pre-research before clinical trials, where you just test out the theoretical molecules with the theoretical disease and see which ones are the best fit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of simulation going on in this field, especially in the medical research.
Okay, quote, "We're really excited about the immediate impacts that this will have on drug discovery," Dr. Martin D. Burke, professor of chemistry at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And one of his researchers are both in a video that's up on our links page. They said the traditional way of synthesizing small molecules requires a step-by-step series of chemical reactions, which is very time-consuming and takes a lot of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Right? Chemical experts is his PhD specialty.
Right. And chemistry outside of the computer is really a very wet and messy process. You never know when something's going to explode. You have to be in a clean room. It evokes all of those images of like Andromeda Strain and molecules getting loose and killing off all of the people who breathe it and stuff like that. Way better to do it in the computer with pictures of molecules.
Now you can design it in the computer, press a button, and you actually have the molecule. You see, that's the difference here.
Oh, so as soon as we're done with the molecules, movie, we just say, give me one,
yes,
and it spits
that's
one
right.
out.
And that's really where one of the ultimate directions our technology is taking us is to instantly create what we want.
That's right.
difference. That's why instant grad is such a big thing, and people poo-poo it and say you shouldn't do have you should be able to wait for things. That's all frustration. You know, waiting is important, but it's not as important as it used to be.
Waiting.
I guess the way, yeah. I think it's losing
important
its value.
To who?
Wait a minute. No, you see, waiting goes away.
I'm in school that, like, the speed is making us crazy. Waiting is, there should be a healthy amount of waiting when it makes sense, just for humans to be able to breathe.
Yeah. And I wouldn't come, maybe the wait is not the right word anymore.
Yeah, waiting is not the
because
right word.
Because these days, if you're in a line or something, you'll pull out your phone and you'll start reading email or whatever. You're not waiting for anything. You're going forward,
yeah,
right?
You're
doing all the stuff you want to do.
You're filling the spaces with requests and fulfillments.
Yeah. And that's normal.
If you have to wait to get it right, then it's good to wait.
Yeah. I'm not saying you should eliminate waiting. That would be very fascist. I'm certainly not that.
We will not have any wasted time.
No waiting. Don't wait.
Hurry up.
I guess being in Santa Cruz here, we have a way of playing with time. We are a vacation town. We try to get away from the 9-to-5 kind of thinking as to, you know, what our everydayness is. That's our job to think about stuff like waiting.
Well, yeah, we're waiting for the tourist season to start.
That's true. That's when things kick into gear here. I wanted to pass on that information on the 3D printer for small molecules. And it's open access, right? So that means that all the universities and everyone interested in creating small molecules can play, from high school kids to even younger to people who would want to do it as a hobby.
So you don't have to be a chemist. This will be your own little jukebox for printing out molecules.
Your 3D printer for small molecules.
In high school, chemistry was the hardest thing class I ever had. It was hard work.
Yeah. Now here, this, you bypassed a lot of that.
They even told me how to freebase. No further comment.
Oh, sounds right out of Breaking Bad, huh? Oh, man.
This is great. So they basically give you building block molecules, probably things like hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen and things that you have access to anyway, but mm-hmm. now you can do it in a kind of a controlled way so you can learn about them or use them in chemistry experiments that might not have been as accessible.
Yeah, small molecule designer would be a job description. They used to call that nanotech.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's called small molecule.
We're rebranding nanotech, huh?
Yeah, molecules. Same genre. We're still working out the words to all this, but small molecule printer is the takeaway I would have for this.
Very
check
interesting.
It out.
Yeah,
check
without out. Knowing the details, it builds 14 classes of small molecules.
Oh, they're working on way more than that. 14 classes of small molecules is the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like a library that you'll have on the machine. You'll be able to call up things. In science fiction, it would be like the replicator.
Right.
Another element to the replication process, taking a step forward.
Yeah.
You know where all this leads, ultimately.
Where?
I would say that the best way to travel to other star systems...
Print yourself a new body.
Print yourself a copy
of... And then email your brain.
No, more than that. I'm thinking bigger than that.
Print yourself a giant body and email 10 copies of your brain.
You're getting closer. I was thinking of the ultimate 3D printer would be where you could 3D print the entire solar system.
But how are you going to print the 3D printer in the first place to make that?
Well, I'll figure that out next. But let me just say this. You'd print the entire solar system and you send that solar system to different places in the universe. And that way you have your entire life support system with you.
I think we should ask our callers what they think of this.
Okay, all right. I'm sure the caller has called about some earlier concept, which we'll be happy to address as well.
All right. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Glenn.
Car. What's up?
Hello.
Hey there.
Hey there. I like Trent's comment about not eliminating waiting. And I prescribe music to, you know, musicians and artists and creative people. I prescribe for you guys, and it's only useless to, a song called Waitin' by Dan Hicks.
Wait by Dan Hicks.
Oh, good. All right, Glenn. We'll look it up. Thank you.
While you're waiting, what you gonna do?
While you're waiting, what you gonna do? That definitely is a good fit.
That's a very good question.
Exactly. You should look it up and play it. I mean, this is me saying this is an A-plus song.
Okay, it's called by Glenn Hicks. Wait.
It's called Waiting. Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks.
Okay, Dan Hicks and
Never
his Hot
Licks. Never heard of Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks. Okay.
I have. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
All right, Glenn.
I remember them.
Cool.
But anyway,
all right, sweetie.
I'm about to lose reception.
Okay,
thanks for checking it in. We'll check it in.
Thanks,
weight
Chris.
Is a very important topic, and I'm glad that some of our artists have thought about this. You know, we all have something to say about waiting.
Yes, especially our next caller. Hi, Ben from Santa Cruz. Hey. Did you want to say something on the Dr. Future show?
Yes, I think that last caller shouldn't drink so early in the afternoon. But
yeah, he didn't wait, huh?
Hey, you guys have got to check out this book and the videos of the interviews of that 78-year-old scientist who used to work in the skunk works for years and years, wrote a book called The Ringmakers of Saturn. Ringmakers of Saturn.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's on the level. They would have 3D printers for rings. Yeah. That would make sense.
Anyway, just that, give you guys heads up. Check it out.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
I was thinking about that there.
I'm sure there has been a number of sci-fi writers have thought on the galactic planetary scales before with our technology, and that's perfect because that is a direction where we're going with this.
Ringmakers of Saturn. All right. Well, that should get us a little closer to 3D printing our universe. Oh, by the way, I have the song here. This is Wait, Dan Hicks.
Yeah, a little closer.
I'm like the people. The kind like you see in line at the depot, waiting for the 103.
All right, that's just a little taste of it there. We're going to have to go to a break real quick.
That was probably before he had his a smartphone.
The 103 is at the gate. They all agree it was worth the wait.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Wanted to mention that news from UC San Diego, search for extraterrestrial intelligence extends to new realms. Astronomers have expanded their search for extraterrestrial intelligence into a new realm known as infrared light. Mm-hmm. And their new instrument has just begun to scour the sky looking for messages from other worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They think that infrared light would be an excellent means of interstellar communication. Shelley Wright, an assistant professor of physics at UC San Diego, was the one that led the development of this new instrument.
Hmm. So infrared light, huh? Mm-hmm. It's going to be better than radio waves.
Well, they say that really short pulses of powerful infrared lasers can outshine a star.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I see.
If only for a billionth of a second.
Uh-huh.
So it could be brighter than everything else around you. And if you would notice that if you were an advanced civilization, if suddenly something got really bright.
If somebody was sending us a message, the number of pi, 3.14, would be a sign of intelligence.
That's true. There maybe a package that has all these things in it would be the best. But any one of them would be evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence.
All right, so using the advances in astrophysics and the latest technology to look for signs of life.
It sees through gas, too. All that interstellar gas and dust, you can't see it through normal light, but with infrared, you can see right through it.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So you can pulse right through it,
I see. It illuminates. So if
more people could see your pulse.
How would that work for sending your brain to another planet?
Well, eventually you could send lots of data over pulses. Maybe you could quantum teleport that way, even. Okay. Or you could at least travel at the speed of light.
Uh-huh.
You know, it'll allow you to send beings over light waves.
I see.
You know, I think that's where it naturally goes.
Okay.
If you ask me.
All right, Dr. Future predicts.
Okay, we got a caller?
Glenn, the fellow who suggested that we call, that we listen to Wait, is calling back. Hi, Glenn, did we get the right song?
No. It's called Waiting. That's Waiting for the 103. It's from 1975. And it's just the album is called It Happened One Bite.
Uh-huh.
But it's Waiting, and it really is the greatest song ever about what you're going to do when you're waiting.
Uh-huh.
But Besides that, the idea of a printer that's going to 3D print the universe, you're going to have a problem here. You know, my background is science. It's going to print the printer that's printing the printer, too.
Yeah, yeah, kind of.
I noticed that, too. That was my issue.
Very Escherian thinking.
The thing is it's called science and technology because technologists don't usually have a good command of science. And they just use the tools and do all this other stuff and look what's practical. It's like an engineer.
Yeah, sure. Well,
anyway,
good to get some
unintended consequences in things.
Okay, well, how about taking down a peg? What about taking it down a peg? What about just printing a planet?
Well, as long as the printer isn't on the planet.
Yeah, no, you get spare parts from the, say, the asteroid belt, which is kind of the leftover detritus from the...
I'm not excited about what I believe I think the singularity is.
Uh-huh. Well, do you believe in the singularity, or do you think that is theory?
Well, I'm a scientist
and
a musicologist. I don't believe. See, technology is kind of a religion. They believe a lot of stuff, like believing in the singularity.
Mm-hmm. They're more gullible, you would say.
I believe that science is going that way. They're gullible, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of false ends, but we don't remember the things that don't work.
Mm.
And there's a lot of brilliant stuff that doesn't work for business reasons, like the attempts at licensing records, digital versions of records, with the record companies.
Mm-hmm.
The record companies didn't want to do that. They didn't want to cut anybody else in, but they didn't know how to do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they just nuisance sued them. Out of business, you know. But you know, it's workarounds stuff, and tech guys are good at workarounds.
And what's your area of expertise, may I ask?
Expertise, it was chemistry. This is all old science, but in seventh grade, I was fundamentally adopted as a science whiz kid by my best friend's father, who was a full professor at 30 at Stanford, and his father was the first head of the National Science Foundation.
So you were involved
with H.G. Waterman.
So as a kid, you were like on Science All-Stars?
I was one of those science creeps, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cool.
Two slide rules, a briefcase. I did not have a pocket protector.
So you weren't quite the Bill Gates geek.
I was collecting records, and simultaneously with this introduction in the science world, I had a beatnik for a teacher at Sherman Junior High School in Palo Alto, where there was a beatnik scene, and he told us about Templars and St. Michael's Alley and all that stuff. So my first dead show was February 23rd, 1963, the Wildwood Boys at the top of the bench.
Man, that goes back. Wow.
Jerry Hunter, raised in Palo Alto.
How did the dead affect your science?
How did the dead affect my science? I was one of the few people on that scene.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, most of
them. That actually understood science.
Yes.
And they had him going for the longest time because, you know, he's an alchemist and he's brilliant.
Yes.
But he doesn't understand. He wasn't trained in science. And certainly few people got what I got. Learning calculus in seventh grade.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you don't, other than they want you to learn some of stuff first.
Wow.
And then I was an exopaleogenic geochemist for NASA when they went to the moon.
Oh.
And that's the looking for organic chemicals on moon rocks, of course, which there's only astronaut fingerprints.
Yeah.
But it's a dry run for Mars.
Did you actually work with moon rock material?
Yes. I was a sister, and we were all covered in plastic. I was also, you know, 2021 when this was going down for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like I was almost on a fast track to a science career that would have me killed by now. I was working with
music saved you.
Daily.
Music
hexane,
saved
yeah.
you,
Glenn. Well, you
music
were
gonna,
oh, yeah,
music,
yeah.
Music saves people.
Yes.
Music therapy, and particularly live music.
Live music, yeah. And as
live music.
Music therapy.
The great session guitarist, Phil Upchurch, and if you're standing up, you can't sit down until you tell me what his first hit was. And I'll spoil it. His first hit was You Can't Sit Down, 1962. He made the observation that we used to produce recordings. Now we record productions. Everything is so produced.
We did cover a little while back a sound healing conference. And there were a lot of stuff that was still pretty raw there that wasn't quite packaged yet or produced.
I've seen that, too, at the psych conference in Oakland a couple of years ago.
I mean, it's a little fringe science, you might say, but it's interesting.
I do heal with music, and right now I am teaching music to a 17-year-old boy, started when he was 11 months old, and we're playing music for it. Because I can remember being before 3 years old, and lying in my crib, bored to tears, needing input. Well, music.
Yeah.
And maybe things with language.
You're tired of waiting.
Yeah, you know. And we should hear howl when they're in the crib.
Yeah, music, well, please. Play,
but, you know, yeah. But music, and particularly, you know, I'm involved with old records, and I teach people through old records and film clips, and I'm working on a website to be just that, recordmuseum.org. I'm interested in teaching people, and why don't we teach people music? It's good for your soul.
Yeah, I'd love to do a show on that.
I suppose I can do that. You guys are on the air awfully early in the morning.
Send us an email.
So your caller who thought I was drinking early in the morning, no, I don't drink.
Yeah, I know that.
Because, like, I don't know, 40 years ago, I realized everywhere I went backstage, there was free alcohol, and all my musician friends were dropping like flies to alcoholism. I, you know, to quote Lenny Bruce, juicers of the lowest.
Mm-hmm. I think he might just be commenting on your phone connection, Glenn. It's a little fuzzy, but we can make it out, you know?
Yeah, Glenn, I'd love to have you in the studio so we can share some stories with high bandwidth quality.
In the meantime, look at Bobby Weir's TEDx.
Bobby Weir's TEDx talk? Okay.
With his engineer on the future for digital music, with high sampling.
The future for digital music, okay.
There's no reason to not do it now. Yeah. And the record companies could sell the whole Grateful Dead catalog again. And that works.
Yeah, well, hey, do you ever go to the Grateful Dead fan club website?
I did once.
There is so much Grateful Dead music there.
Yes, one criticism, though, I went for New Year's Eve. They were playing on New Year's Eve. I went to almost all of them. And they had the audience chatter in between the songs, you know, 10 minutes of nothing happening and tuning up and stuff. It was glorious. But after a half an hour, my ears got tired, just like Bobby Weir said.
Yeah.
Because I was listening to loud digital music, and I mostly listen to loud analog, loud live in concert, and live old records. I have not been...
We're going to go to a break, but could you shoot me an email at future@ksco.com? future@ksco.com, and we'll continue the dialogue.
Right, yeah. Okay. It's your 5D, too.
Yeah, okay. We've got to work on that. I'm thinking you give me an idea of a pulsing infrared light from a dead show, for contact with extraterrestrials, but that to be continued.
All right. Then. Yeah. Thanks.
Right.
I'm sure there's fans there.
Bye. Yeah, bye-bye.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We are hot on the trail of a few new topics here.
So that's the extraterrestrial story that I had today, using a pulsed infrared light.
That's it.
Great idea.
All right. If they're out there, we're going to find them.
It'll go right through all the interstellar gas dust and everything and reach everybody.
Right. The only problem with infrared, according to this article, is that the ETs have to be pointing the signal at us because it's a laser after all.
Well, narrow bandwidth.
That's right.
We'll have repeaters before long on the other planets.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you ever take a laser pointer and try and point it at a star, it's challenging.
Look, we can get signals from Mars. We can do this.
Okay.
Right?
There has to be a desire to communicate, I'd say.
I'd say.
Way more intentional than cell phones.
There's got to be some simple first contact thing that happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then we'll take it from there. Oh, here's an interesting story. Costa Rica has actually gotten off, I wouldn't say that about a country. Costa Rica has actually gotten all of its electricity from renewables for 75 days straight.
Woohoo! Go
75
Costa Rica.
Days straight.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
Isn't that wild?
So renewables,
it got 100% of its electricity. They had a lot of hydro, for example.
Oh, yeah,
and they have
that's
a lot
right.
of water running.
Yeah, as I recall, when we visited Costa Rica, they are a country that has a continuous waterway from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean, like all the way through. I don't think it's just one river, but you could take one river to the next, to the next.
White River rafting was just delicious there.
Yeah.
Just absolutely.
I don't recall. There was a big protest a few years ago because they were talking about damming one of those rivers.
Yeah. Well, they have all the water issues
that
people would have, but they have lots of water. That's the great thing about
that. They have lots of water. That is the
thing. So hydroelectricity, though, it's great to have that. You can be vulnerable if that's all you have. Because climate changes and stuff can affect the amount of water flow, as we've seen here in California. Mm-hmm. we're also looking at as one of their other natural resources, the volcanoes.
Oh, and that's a lot of power.
And hydrothermal. Hydrothermal temperatures.
So that's good. So they're going to
so they're getting
harness
a lot
the
of
heat.
Their,
That's good. The Arenal. I wonder if the Lord Arenal volcano will approve of this technology.
Yeah. No, we should have one that harnesses earthquakes. That'd be good.
Yeah, there you go. Let's just
what's our natural
if only we knew when the next one would be.
Yeah, what's our natural energy? And
a lot of energy going to waste with those volcanoes. You know, if you could figure out a way to harness some of that.
Yeah, you know, I bet the planet does not consider that wasted energy, you know?
No, of course not.
In old world mythology, the volcanoes are considered the guardians of the planet because they, more than any other thing that's alive on the planet, can affect the climate, except maybe us humans. But in the old world, it was considered the volcanoes that were in charge of who lived or died.
Who do the volcanoes answer to?
Mother Gaia. They're her soldiers.
From what I can see, they look almost like giant zits. And they can pour.
That's a thought.
Yeah. And they
much
can
exactly
pour liquids through them, right?
Yeah. They're worse than zits. They're boils. I mean, like lava shoots out through them. No oil. And I'd say that like all the oil wells are the giant zits.
And having zits is no way to attract aliens.
And teenage volcanoes have more zits than the others.
Yeah. Yes, and what are we now? I think that's one of the great stories today. Is humanity going from a teenagehood into adulthood?
Good question.
Is that our mytho-poetic story point?
Oh, that's a good question. Where did you come up with that question?
It's
that's
just
a
many people
one.
Think that. You know, where are we in the face? Some people think humanity is like a baby just being born. Some think we're finished. We're in old age and this is it.
Uh-huh. Instead of
So there's a lot of belief systems out there, a lot of stories.
Instead of being fighting all the time like teenagers are, we could learn to be more adult.
I don't think teenagers are fighting all the time. I think that's the exception rather than the rule.
And the world needs a certain amount of teenagers.
I mean humanity in general, we could learn to get along with each other.
I think most people are getting along somewhat successfully.
Except Obama and Putin.
I think emotional literacy is still in its infancy, and most of our leaders have never had any training in that yet. It's only now that kids are getting training in emotional literacy. I visited a school in Palo Alto. They were teaching kids how to deal with resentments to other kids and fights that they had and help them to look at these issues as part of their education. I didn't have that as a kid. Emotional literacy is a new term to me.
Yeah. I mean, just a generation ago, if a boy was getting beat up at school and went home and told his parents, they would pretty much tell him to tough it out and end it himself or something. You know, I mean, it was really about if you get picked on, fight back and don't get bullied and
culture,
be responsible for yourself that way.
And culture makes these unconscious rules of how to deal with bullies. Ignore them. People walk away. Well, it turns out in research that if one person intervenes in a bully situation, the bully usually drops the case.
Yeah, right. Bullies are really a minority. And the number of people between bullies and the people they pick on, that's considered to be like about 15% of everybody. And then 85% of the people are bystanders who either egg it on or just watch and do nothing.
You just change that a little bit and presto, change-o.
Yeah.
Things get better.
As soon as the bystanders stand up for the political, not fighting and not allowing bullying, it goes away.
So, John, the political situation would be affected the same way because there's basically a lot of schoolroom behavior going on among our leaders, and that's because that's where they stop learning how to play. You know, it's kind of like how people stop being artists at 10.
Yeah.
They start getting judged for things, and you start losing your sense of artistry and play, and because you're being judged.
We can love our neighbors. That's a good start.
And all those things unravel in an emotional literacy so that you don't judge yourself so harshly and give yourself the freedom to be more yourself. And there are a lot of different programs that teach this sort of thing. It's great. So our leaders just haven't had that yet. And so it's the next generation that's going to incorporate that kind of knowledge.
There you go. Yeah, we're waiting for the current crop of leaders to die off and stop
that's usually
stop
what
bullies
has to happen.
From ruining the planet. And
but
then
maybe not.
And be more adult.
They learn.
Who have learned to be a little bit more royal in the way that they approach their personal reality and their cooperation with others. They come from a place of like, well, I'm a king, so of course what I want is going to happen. But you're a king too, so let's be gracious to each other, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's
a
natural.
And of course the queens, they're in there making their voices heard as well. Getting cooperation in their own unique way.
And the reality is that we all have the equivalent of what kings or queens had just a few generations ago. Bucky Fuller had pointed out that we all have about 12 Roman slaves, if you consider the washing machines and the cars. Yeah.
And flushing toilets.
And yeah, it's a remarkable garbage
collection. Kings never had those.
No. So naturally, we're all going to see ourselves as royalty. That's kind of the American evolution of there's no royalty, where the hierarchy is just not fair to getting it so that everyone's high in the hierarchy. You know, we all live like kings and queens now compared to recent past. It's really interesting.
We got to watch out for people that think they're emperors.
Well, there is a lot of operation on old belief systems that cause pain and suffering, like the idea of fighting over resources, for example, is a very old reason for war. And no longer necessary if we understand the issue on a deeper level. If we take the time to, that's a whole topic in and of itself.
You want to go there?
No, that's all right. And only if somebody in the audience really wants to. But I wanted to point out that a lot of things are changing quickly in life. For example, I have a very interesting piece on how Cuba is getting wired. Now, they were in the dark ages with the internet. They were like 1989.
Well, and according to folks we spoke with at breakfast, they're still in the dark ages. Not only did they not have internet, they don't have chickens. They don't have, you know.
But you watch the way this evolves. You watch the way it evolves. Because it's like just as we did at the beach house. You can now buy little internet repeater things and plug them into your outlet, and boom, you suddenly have internet in another part of your house. You can extend the range. It used to be that we had to get a signal from across the Monterey Bay from our beach house to get a Wi-Fi from like one of the hotels in Capitola, I think.
We were like beaming a little antenna.
It was hard to get bandwidth.
That's right.
But now it's trivial.
Yeah, you go down to the store, you buy an amplifier, you plug it into your socket. And
yeah, so to wire a whole country, is relatively trivial. Cuba is like not even a state. You know, in terms of our ability to wire them, I mean, the telcoms will be able to go in there and do it in their sleep.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
It's got to be a new market.
It is.
Modernized Cuba.
It's true. It's one of the new markets. That's true.
Well, people want to be connected. Mm-hmm. People want to have access to the world's information. They want to have access to each other. They want to communicate.
Absolutely. It'll all connect. And everyone has ability to solve problems and create a better reality. And if they choose to collaborate along those lines, then we'll do that. If we choose to fight, we'll think about that. We got to work it out.
I don't think most people choose to fight. I think fighting is a response as opposed to, I think there's very few people that initiate aggression. Mm-hmm. And the aggressors who do initiate it, get a bunch of people to do it with them and sort of make everybody else have to respond.
What really brings everyone in alignment on this is having a collaborative vision. And it's not just a country vision, it's a species vision. Like, where are we going with all this?
Yeah. All right, folks. We're going to have to...
And that's what Carolyn Casey, our guest in the next hour, is more than capable of talking about. It's really, what is the new myths that we might embrace that could be really good for us in the long run?
Right. Yeah, we're going to have a really fun conversation with her about that.
And other things.
And many other things, that's right.
She's speaking in Santa Cruz next weekend, you know, so...
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure she'll give us all that information after the hour.
Yeah. This has been the Dr. Future Show. We have a number of other links that you can check out at your leisure at our website, drfutureshow.com/links. We'll take you right there.
All right. And stay tuned for the next hour when we will bring you a really interesting guest. This is KSCO Santa Cruz, San Jose, Salinas, Monterey. Thanks for listening. The Dr. Future Show.